In Parshas Balak, we have Bilaam's curses / blessings that he bestows upon Klal Yisrael. I'd like to take a look at one of the phrases that Bilaam uses, which is very, very strange. In the middle of all of these blessings, he says the following, Perakav Kimmel, Pasuk Yod. Source 1. Who has counted the dust of Yaakov, Mimana Afar Yaakov, or numbered a quarter of Israel, may my soul die the death of the upright, and my end be like his. Balak said to Bilaam, what have you done to me? To curse my enemy I've brought you, but behold, you have even blessed. Very fascinating. In the middle of all of these brachos, Bilaam almost pauses and says, Tamot nafshi mot yisharim utehiach reti kamahu. I'd like to die the death of the righteous, and my end should be like their end. So we need to understand what exactly was Bilaam thinking. What does it mean to die the death of the righteous? Who are the righteous? What is the way of the righteous? Why did Bilaam even have a havamina, a thought that he could even be on that level of dying the death of the righteous? And finally, at the end of Mirtz Hashem, we'll talk about what is the idea of dying a Jewish death. Indeed, as Rav Munk points out in source number 2, Bilaam believed that if he died a natural death, he, like the Jews, would have a share in the world to come. However, foresaw if he died by the sword, his fate would be that of Gehenna. Just point out, parenthetically almost, the Chaim Moshe speaks about how this end of the Pasuk fits into the entire context of the Pasuk. Should this not be its own Pasuk in its own right? What is the connection of the beginning of the Pasuk talking about Mimana Afar Yaakov Umispar and Rova Yisrael? So the Chaim Moshe Rav Buk Zatzal points out in Source 4, Mishnah Perkei Avos tells us, he's stuck up a Shloshet Dvarim. Look at three things and you won't come to sin. Know where you came from, know where you're going, and know in front of whom you need to give a judgment. So where you've come from is Mimana Afar Yaakov, the dust of Yaakov, that every single seed is counted among Klal Yisrael. Where you're going, I want to die the death of the righteous. Utiyach riti kamohu, I want to be able to give a din v'cheshbon, an accounting like the Jews will be able to do in the future. Rav Wolbe, echoing this idea, notes that Bilaam wished to die the death of the righteous among Bnei Yisrael. There's nothing more physical than death itself. Person passes away, his body is laid to rest. Yet if Bilaam desired to die the death of the upright, he must have been able to discern that death for the Jewish people was on a higher plane than death of others. Through his prophecy, Bilaam was able to recognize that the three things that are most closely associated with the physical world, earth, procreation, and death, take on a whole new meaning when it comes to Jewish people. They are transformed from seemingly mundane and physical into Kedusha. I'll just add parenthetically, there are those psychologists, Jewish psychologists, that say that there's a challenge in trying to use the general psychology in understanding the mind of a Jew. Because the Jewish mind, the Jewish soul, is coming from a different place. It's coming from a different dimension. And therefore you need to use different tools because what you're dealing with is just a totally different being. So that's understanding that the Jew's birth, the Jewish death, everything about the Jews, albeit it looks the same as everybody else, is really dramatically different. Okay, so let's begin Sad. He wants to die the most Yisharim, like the death of the righteous people. Well, first let's start asking ourselves, who are these righteous people that he would like to die like? So the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, this is quoted in source number 8, tells us, these are the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And indeed, the Netziv and Emek Dovar notes that Sefer Breishit is called Sefer HaYashar, because the Avos personify Yashros. As the Netziv, Rav Vifus brings down, well, what is this quality of Yashros that the Avos personify, that Bilaam thinks that he could even have some aspect, some connection to it? So he notes that all three of the Avos came in contact with the nations of the world, and in many different situations, albeit they personally were negatively affected by these people, they nonetheless wished their best, well-being. Avraham Avinu had his issues with stone. the war of with Stone, a lot of conflict. Nevertheless, he davened for Stone. Yitzhak Avinu has all these altercations over the wells. He never really fights back and argues and demands his will. He's able to step back. Yaakov Avinu in the house of Lavan, even though he's cheated over and over again, he still is the most dedicated and loyal worker for Lavan. That's Yashrus. Yashrus is like going above and beyond. That albeit he has the right to say, hey, Lavan, you've cheated me 10 times. How faithful do you want me to be? What do you want from me? Yashrus is not about if you're right or wrong. You're hired to do the work. The employer isn't doing his end of the deal. Again, we're not talking about halachically here. Yashrus says, although he's not doing his end of the deal, that doesn't take away from you doing your end of the deal. And your responsibility is you. Like so often, so many people say, well, they're not doing theirs. Why should I do mine? It's like, you know, little kids. Well, they didn't wash the dishes. Why should I wash the floor? What does one thing have to do with the other? They're not washing the dishes. That's their responsibility, and they'll have to deal with it. And your responsibility is to wash the floor, and one doesn't have to do with the other. And that, in source number 9, is what Bilam says. He says, I'm not asking to be a chassid or a tzaddik. He's not holding there. But a yasher that the Jewish people never did anything to me, and I want them totally to be destroyed. It's almost as if he's questioning himself. It's like, where am I that these people who are totally blameless are now trying, I'm trying to curse them and trying to, you know, get rid of them? So, tamo nafshi mochi sharim, it's as if Bilam is going through his own inner struggle. Why can't I be on this level of yashrus? Why can't I be on this level of straightness? It's interesting, as Ravulbi points out, in Aleshur, in source number 10, Pasuk tells us in Kohelet, Ha'lokim asa et adam yashar, ve'hema bikshu chashbonos rabim. Kadosh Baruch Hu created Adam yashar, straight. And Adam, referring as Rashi says Adam Rishon, it's really true of all people, create all of these scenarios. Well, in this case, and in that case, and you didn't really mean it in this case, Elokim asat adam yashar. Hashem made people straight. There is a certain protocol and mode of behavior that we expect from people. And this is how we're wired. Elokim asat adam yashar. Hashem made us as individuals, and Hashem made us that our inner desire, and we all know this, like we want justice, and we want that which is right, and we want to stand up for our rights. Why? Because this is how our DNA is, that we want that things should be yashar. And Dailan Ladato, Hayechidud Vayashros, the asterisk in Tem, Yeshlanu Kamoshai Tal Adam Rishon, our individuality, and that ability to go straight is like Adam Rishon. Vim Niye Yisharim Kashir Baranu Elokim, Velone Vakesh Hashbonot Arabim, Hamabdim et Hayashra. And if we do indeed follow the correct, the higher path, so to speak, Kazna Male Tayuchi Hashkachal, then we'll be able to do our mission that is unique for us. And this is indeed, Rav Dessler speaks about Michtam Eliyahu in source number 11. Pasuk in Hoshea, Yadal, Chavashuvah's Torah, right around the corner. Ki Yisharim Darchei Hashem, the ways of Hashem are straight. Tzadikim Yahubah and Poshim Yikashlubah. Tzadikim will benefit from those, and the wicked will stumble. Everything Hashem does is yashar, is correct, is straight, is here to help us. The righteous people are going to utilize it to come closer to Hashem, and the wicked people are going to abuse it. And that, my friends, is the challenge that each and every one of us have. So great, we understand. Tamot nafshi, mot yisharin, he wants to die the way of the righteous. He really wants to reach this level of the avos hakadoshim, the higher path, the exalted level, the way it should be in this world. So if that's the case, and Bilam really is davening for this, it means that Bilam really believed that he was capable of reaching this level. Bilam, who is known to be, you know, such a, you know, Ruach Gvoha, Nefesh Rechava, Bilam, who had such terrible mythos, he really believed he could reach this level of Yashrus? How do we understand this? So I'd like to learn together a beautiful parts of a beautiful essay of Rav Neventhal in his Sichos of Sefer Bamidbar. He says, we're in source number 12 now, if you take a look at the way Bilam speaks when the messengers come to him, and even with Balak. So we'll start, for example, Vayavo Bilam Vayjabur Elav Divrei Balak, Vayomer Lehem Linu Po Halayla. What is the first thing we meet Balaam? What does he say to the messengers? Stay here the night. Vashivosi etchem davar kasher yidaber Hashem elai. And I'll let you know what Hashem says to me. Wow! When you take a look, Balaam over and over again, this is his refrain. I can't do anything till when Hashem tells me something. He looks like Kechamet Tzadikei Olam. He looks like he's a grosser tzaddik. Whatever Hashem tells me I can do, and if not, I can't do it. Lo uchal lavor pi Hashem elokai, lasok tanal delo. I can't do small or big, unless Hashem has commanded me to do this. So if this is the case, my friend, how do I reconcile this with the Bilam we know? He seems to be like, you know, halavai, I should be able in my life to say I only do whatever Hashem tells me to do. Wow, that's gavaltic level. So we know that Chazal, the Medrash tells us that Lavan and Bilam are the same person. It doesn't mean necessarily that they're the same person. It means they have the same personality traits. And that personality trait is to be through and through a Ramai, a trickster. Where you see Lavan says, Achi, achi ata, you're my brother, v'matani chinam, you work for me for free. And then he changes his wages 10 times. It's like talking out of two sides of your mouth. That is the persona, both of Lavan and of Bilam. That on the one hand, if you look at them, you know, on the right side of the bed, so to speak, they seem like, wow, they're so magnanimous and so nice. And on the other side, there is, right, this part of them that is ready to, you know, stab you in the back. Et tu, Brute, and a full Caesar Lahavdil. And that's why, my friends, in Source 14, Hakava belated to Bilam hu efo shmira matmedet al tadmit shel tzadik gamur. The characteristic of Bilam is he puts on the show of being a tzaddik. That's his greatness. He knows how to fool everybody. And that's why when the shlichei Balak, the messengers of Balak, come and they say, you know, Balak wants you to curse this nation, so what should have he answered? He should have said, knowing that they're the Jewish people, am I able to curse the nation that is so beloved to Hashem? I mean, that should have been his natural response. And as he says here, like, he wasn't stupid. Like, he didn't think there's some, you know, little tribe from Mongoli, Shinikla Lezor, that suddenly came into Moab's land and he wants them to curse this land. He knew very well what he's talking about. And yet he says, he plays dumb, like, oh, who is this nation? Do you think that Hashem really wants this nation to be destroyed? Well, maybe. He's acting as if he's, you know, completely innocent, like he doesn't know what's going on here. And further, we find here, and this is part of his, you could either call it brilliance or part of his psychological downfall, is whenever he talks, he, again, that two sides of the mouth, he says, V'achat edvar Hashem, we're in 17 in the bracket, V'achat edvar asher deber lechot otaseh. Hashem says, I'll let you go, but you know what? You got to say only what I want you to say. Barur, and he wrote such a tekalo. I mean, it's obvious that Hashem is telling me, you know, I really don't want you to go. But if you insist on going, I'll let you go, but you got to be careful to say what what I want you to say. But what is Bilam thinking himself? Oh, it's going to be good. If Charlie said, there, Hashem, I can manage with God. You know, he told me not to go, and then he changed his mind. You know what, he's going to change his mind again, and since I should bless them, I'll change his mind again. He is kigonev das helyona, as if he can fool Kadosh Baruch Hu, who yelech rak b'shus Hashem. Obviously, he's going to go only with Hashem's permission. Aval yaseh asher rotzeh, double underline in 17, but he'll do whatever he wants. Yochal treif, he'll eat dan kosher, v'chashuv jidei chotem et hechshev. On the treif has to be a sign of kashrus. That's Bilam. Bilam is pretending to be the Groitzer Tzaddik when he has an agenda in his own mind. And that's why, in 18, when things aren't going his way, the Pasuk tells us, that he turns toward Vayeshed El Midbar Panav. He turns toward the desert. Why? Because at least, let me mention, the sin of Chet HaEgel. He's going to do whatever he can to, so to speak, manipulate God. A thing should happen his way. But obviously only doing whatever Hashem tells him. He can't do anything else. Like he says to Balak, what do you want from me? I told you whatever Hashem tells me, I have to do. Now here's the key. Yadua Shel Masim 19, Shadam Mevatzea, we know the things that a person does do. Yesh hashba'a mitztaberet al pnimiyoto. And this now we're coming into our own lives, and this is the point of learning. Whatever we do in our lives, it adds up, and it has an effect on us, right? So if a person, you know, tells one white lie, nah, nishkefer lach, I mean, it's not good, don't get me wrong. But when it's 10, 15, 20, it becomes a habit, becomes who you are. Al nafsho imitvonein harei shiksut zo shel sitkut musa matzichai masman latot et bilam atzmo. Bilam may not be, you know, tricking everyone around him. He may be or he may not be. But what's far more scary is that over time Bilam is tricking himself. Hasheker mechalel al tocho, the falsehood is going inside of him. V'matchil lamin b'sitkuto be'emedu b'tamim, and he really believes that he's a tzaddik. I listen to what God tells me. I'm only doing what God tells me. And he's convinced himself that he's really a tzaddik. That's why he says, Tamo nafshi mot yasharim. So we ask the question, does Bilam really believe that he could die the death of a yashar? And the answer is, my friends, and this is what's so scary, yes. He has fooled himself enough that he really believes that he's going to die. Like the Avos HaKadoshim, Amitat Nishikad, right? When Hashem's going to draw his soul out. Hatarak HaYadua in Source 20, He Harbei Me'ever Lusefer, Bo Mitarim Karod Am Yisrael, it's not just a history book. Why do we know so much details from Chazal and from the Chumash about Bilam? And the answer is in the asterisk, Mishum Shekol Elo Kaimim Banu, we have Bilams inside of us. Torah wants us to know so clearly the inner conflicts that we all have. The naskili asher choteinu. We are all this way, you know. On the outside, we look like, oh, we're so magnanimous and we're so sensitive and so sweet. And then when it's, you know, not convenient for us, and when it's, you know, we can do whatever we want. But I'm really a nice person. But when I really think I'm a nice person, so then when I act this way, like, there's a disconnect. And our whole lives are like a disconnect. And that's a challenge. The challenge is because when I live a life of disconnect, I can never fix myself because I never think there's anything wrong. Because I'm not aware of who I really am. You know, as the model that he gives in 21 is a city of stone. And he gives two examples of stone. The second is much more famous than the first. We'll do both. The first is in stone. Anytime an ani, a poor person, came to stone, right? We have this vision that they were very mean to poor people. Not so. When a poor person came to stone, they would say, oh, bruchim habayim, welcome, let me give you a donation. And they would give them, you know, a 20 shekel bill. And in fact, they would even write their name on it. Right, so they should know that we personally want to give you this gift. And this person would get a lot of money. There was, however, you're right, there was, however, one little rule in stone. You know, every city has some rules, you know, like, that's normal. The particular rule in this city of stone was you weren't allowed to sell food to a poor person. So he had all this money in his pocket, but he wasn't allowed to buy any food. And therefore, unfortunately, it's unfortunate, he would die of starvation. And then the people would come, because they had their names on all their money, and just take their money right back. No, they didn't steal. No. They just took back what belonged to them. This is, again, doing what you want to do, looking like you're so gracious, when you're really stabbing someone in the back. And the more classic example is the bed of stone, right? Instead of making a visitor go find the right bed for them, they would help them out. If the visitor was very tall and the bed was short, just chop the legs, no problem. And if the visitor was short and the bed was long, you just elongate the legs. And he says, my friends, that's just a mashal for us. Atem yodim haratzu chazal lomar b'dugma zu. You want to know in the squiggly in 21 what the Torah is trying to tell you? Shekar b'diuk anu osim l'torah shalano. This is exactly what we do with our Torah. Hagisha yitzodid hi. Our approach is mashani rotzeh, whatever I want, the bed. Mashanochli, what's comfortable for me. V'ka'ed and now l'toch ha'godol shani rotzeh, and I need the exact size that fits me. So what do? I take the Torah, or in this case, the guest, and I cut it down, or I lengthen it, and I do whatever I want. Rabosai, this is our problem. Our problem is shibikulanu chavui bilam katan echad kaseh shugam yodeh dad elyon, someone who knows the Chumash, and at the same time, it's just not convenient for them at a certain point in time. So, you know, if it's not convenient. You know, perhaps we've discussed this before, perfect examples are, we're now in Tammuz, the summer months, and vacations are a perfect example. Of course I only eat kosher. I mean, obviously, like, duh, I'm a Shomer Shabbos person. But you have to understand, I'm going somewhere, you know, off to those islands that there's no kosher food. Or it's not the same hashirim that I usually use. Well, what do you expect? Like, if I'm going there, I got to eat. You don't want me to starve. Torah doesn't want me to starve. So I take Torah and I stretch it or I shrink it according to my needs. My needs are to go to that island. So therefore, I'll eat food that I normally wouldn't eat because it fits my vacation plans. Ah, who told you to go to that island? Who told you not to bring the food with you? Who told you whatever it is? Where's that coming from? It's coming from, I want to live life. I'm obviously a Torah Jew, but at the same time, I you know, want to make the guests fit the bed. Right? And the same thing holds by sneas. You know, we have certain standards of sneas at home. And then when we go on vacation, well, you know, everyone's dressed this way. What do you want? You're in the beach, et cetera, et cetera. The examples are ad infinitum. And the question is, are you loyal to what you believe in? And or do we have this Bilam aspect in us where when it's convenient, I do this, and when it's not convenient, I do that, and I fool myself to thinking that I'm a grosser tzaddik. Just, you know, there's certain cases. And I fall into the bed of stone. And this is the challenge. Source 23. The challenge, and I'd like to share with you perhaps two approaches on how to be able to get out of this trap, of this Bilam trap, so to speak, is how do we be able to make sure that we don't, you know, fool ourselves, so to speak. So I'll share two ideas. The first idea is the Sichus Musar, where he brings this idea where he says he wants to die the death of Yisharim, which is she shleimus ha'adam v'tachlit yitzirato. This is the greatest level you can reach. U'meidach giso chay kebeimau paratza kol derim anushim. On the other hand, he's breaking all boundaries and all, you know, basic human context. U'meir arnu shein tostira. It's not a contradiction. Why? Here's the key. Mishum shekol ma sheisig mechachmato lo yanogei alav klal. He knows things intellectually, but he doesn't allow that intellectual knowledge to impact him, to make him part of who he is. Our job. Idea one of how to get out of this trap. And that is, b'chdei l'kasher b'nei yidiyah, sichli v'argasha chushi, sarich simat lev. You got to pay attention. U'belo simat lev, harei kol ma sh'adam yodeh, eino nogei lo, v'eino shayach elav klal. You have to ask yourself. You have to be honest. You have to think. You have to process. It's very similar, he says, to the fact that in Makas Bara, all those who were not Yireat Hashem, Velosam Elipo, and didn't pay attention, left their cattle and their servants outside, and they died in Bara. If you realize, well, you know what, there have been many plagues, and you know, they've been warned, and they've happened. Well, gee, you know what, I think we better take, you know, our best bet and put everything inside. We're Samlek, you pay attention. And you're aware, and you care enough to ask, and you care enough to think, and you care enough to say to yourself, wow, what am I going to eat there? That's going to be a problem. Well, let me have a few options. Let me check out, is there a standard of my kashrus in this particular place? If yes, great. Maybe I'll bring food. That's another option. I have a number of options. Or maybe I'll choose a different place to go to. The fact that every one of my neighbors down the block has gone there is really irrelevant. right? So it's about making choices out of thinking and out of being aware of what you're thinking. It's called Sima Slave. And in that way, you're not going to be fooling yourself. So that, my friends, is obviously one idea that we have to focus in on. Just to end this nekuda of paying attention and really taking responsibility. We have around the corner Tisha B'Av, if Mashiach doesn't come, and there the Pasuk in Yirmiyah tells us, Gam b'knafecha nimsa'u, the Aaron 25, Dam nefashot evyonim nikim, on your corners of your garment is the blood of innocent people. V'tamru ki nikesti, and you say you're innocent. What are you getting punished for? So here, it's Gevaldik Pshat in the Pasuk in Yirmiyah. It's not only that they're getting punished for their murder and all the social oppression. Yes, but what are they really getting punished for? Al Amrech Lo Chatati. I'm not taking personal responsibility. What? We sin? We're innocent. You know, so it's not such a good idea. Okay, maybe we could have done things better, but we're not guilty of anything. If you're not going to take, and that's Billy Bowes, Rashi says, in your heart, if you're not going to take personal responsibility, if you're not going to realize that you've done something wrong, then there's no way you're going to fix it. And there's no way you're going to reorient yourself back to the level of Yashrus. And you're going to be living your life, Akov Alev, in this type of crookedness. And the sad thing is, you don't even see the contradictions. Oftentimes our children will come to us and say, well, A, B, how does it work? And you're like, And if you're honest, you say, you know, you're right. I am living a life of contradiction. Whatever it is, I'm going to be more careful. And simple things, you know, where a father may say to a child, why are you on your, computer playing a game? You should be learning Mishnayos right now. That's what you do. You're a batlan. Learn Mishnayos. You shouldn't just be sitting on the computer all day. I mean, well, what is the father doing? He's on his computer, right? So again, you know, let's be honest. If you really believe that there's an idea of Bittul Torah and you have to spend your time well, then live that way. But don't talk from two sides of your mouth. And the second idea, and this is what I want to develop a lot more in depth, is how do you break out of this Bilam trap? The answer is by recognizing our purpose in this world. Source 27, Kovetz Sichos. He says the following. Bilam Ra'avi Kir Malos Ben Israel. You see, Galus Avos, V'Ivala Mot Kedotam. You saw the greatness. He wanted to die like them. Aval Ta'a B'Davar Achad. He made one big mistake. And that is, as the Rambam said, fools don't like introductions. Which means, he just wanted to get to cut to the chase. Get to the end result without having to work hard. Bilam Ta'aba says, Savar Shef Shalomot Mot Yisharim Afagav Shekol Yamav Chayim Atava V'Ramot Ruach. He thought, I could die a holy death and I can live my life any way I wanted to. He didn't understand that you can't be, the only way to be an Avraham Avinu is if you struggle, if you work hard. And this is what it's about. The Sichos Moser says in 28, Avodah Sadam Itakem V'Lakodah Tzvam Mikol HaRa. Why are we in this world? To work on ourselves. V'Litalom Imadrigal Imadrigal, to go from step to step. And it's like a field full of all these rocks and full of all these things that hamper its growth. So you can't just think, well, I'll take a magic wand and I'll have everything grow. You have to work the field. You have to take stone by stone and remove it. And within us, we have a lot of stones. We have a lot of Yitzharas. Yitzharas referred to as an Evan. We have a lot of them, and we have to remove one by one. Bilam thought he could, have his cake and eat it too, and you can't. The lesson of how to get out of Bilam's trap is to know that life is about struggle. Robinson Heller, in her Sefer, Let's Face It, in the introduction, has a great piece. I'm going to pick up toward the middle, where of a mashal, of a fellow who is training for a marathon, for a running race to get the gold medal. He's training. So here he is running uphill, sweating, hot outside, and he is huffing and puffing, and this is to build stamina, to be able to run this race. Meanwhile, there's a Cadillac that is driving nearby, and he sees this guy who's huffing and puffing, up the hill. And he stops, rolls down the window, and says, "Come on, Sonny, I'll give you a ride up the hill." And he said, No. So now let's continue at 29. Why would you want to work up a sweat when you can have a ride in an air-conditioned Cadillac? At the crest of the hill, the route levels out. Before beginning his run, Gary had placed four hurdles at 50-meter intervals on the shoulder of the stretch of back road. The Cadillac quickly pulls up to the first hurdle. The driver jumps out and pulls a hurdle of Gary's path. "There, son, now at least this won't be in your way." Gary, frustrated and angry, shouts, "I wanted the hurdle there so I could jump over it." This parable illustrates two approaches to life. Most people, like the Cadillac driver, deem it crucial that wherever they are going, they get there in comfort. Even people who are unclear about their goal measure the success of their day, week, or life according to how smoothly it ran, how few obstacles they encountered, and how much contentment they enjoyed. Rare people, like the Olympic trainee, care less about the ease of the journey than about those who they become in the process. Their goal is to be great in some field. Therefore, they relish difficulties because they appreciate the growth which results from tackling obstacles, whether it's an athlete building his muscles and endurance, or an artist perfecting her skill, or a political dissident honing his powers of resistance. They are aware that greatness results from challenge. And this, my friends, is mamish the difference between Bilam and the Avos. Obviously, many differences. And this is the difference between Heim Amelim v'Anachdu Amelim. They work hard and we work hard. Understand life is not about a Cadillac ride. That's Bilam. Oh, I'll have, you know, drinks and I'll do whatever I need to do. At the end of the road, I'll get out, you know, and I'll get to the end. No. It's not just about the end, right? Tamot nafshi mot yesharim. I'll die a tzaddik's death. Whoa. What about living a tzaddik's life? Because what life is about is not just about dying. It's about how you lived. And living in order to die, and we'll talk more about this very soon, Mir Tashem, death is really a continuation of life. And the real meaning in death is the way we lived our lives. And the meaningful life doesn't have to be painful, right? Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. The idea is, yes, there'll be pain in life, but you don't have to suffer through it. It's challenging. It's hard. But that's what builds us. That's what builds stamina. That's what builds character. To be able to work through a project over and over again until you get it right. All people come into this world to become great human beings. Therefore, the Creator provides them, says Rebbe Tzaneller, the exact number and type of challenges necessary to develop that greatness. The challenges bestowed on any human being are no more random than the number of rungs in the DNA helix or the number of stamens in a daisy. Just as every cell and cell component in the body is purposeful, so every hurdle we encounter is purposeful. Its purpose is to jump over it. There's a great, I think, very fascinating mashal that the Chochmah Matzbuin brings in Source 30 from Rav Zaitchik. Or Chadash quotes it from Mayne Achayim. Rav Zaitchik gives the following mashal. He says, well, why is it so difficult? You know, you go to a shir, you hear something inspirational, you read something that's inspirational, great, let me do it. Why is it that when you feel like so fired up and so inspired, that it lasts for a very short time? You're right, sometimes it has an effect. And instead of feeling like, wow, and empowered, you feel sad and depressed and, oh, I can't do this. He said, what are the dynamics here? And listen to this mashal that he gives. I think it's so fascinating. Obviously, I'm going to contemporize it. He says, imagine a 28-year-old girl gets married, mazel tov, baruch Hashem. Marries a boy who wants to live in Israel. Great. She loves Israel, no problem. She gets Israel. She likes her husband. She likes her apartment. She likes Israel. And she's sitting crying all day. 6 months she's sitting and crying. Well, why is she crying? She's happy she's married. She likes her husband. She likes Israel. What is the problem? You know what the problem is? She misses home. What's the problem is? She misses her regular routine. And he says, and we all know this to be true, right? It's like, you know, again, summertime, homesick. Your kid may hate it at home, but he's homesick she's homesick when she goes to camp, right? Because what's routine? It's what we know. And this is what happens to us, he says, psychologically. When the person hears, wow, I'm going to change. Whoa, depression hits in. You want me to change? You want me to leave my home? You want to leave my comfort zone to do something else? It's like moving far away. I don't want to do that. And that's the challenge that we have. So it's very nice to say life is about hurdles, life is about challenges, life is about moving on. Push comes to shove, those are hard to do. And you're right, the challenges come in our way and we have to overcome them. But it's not easy, because every time we overcome something, we have to work against a certain resistance and we have to really push forward. And that's the challenge that we have. And that's what makes us great, that when it is difficult and it is hard and I go against my grain and I go against my comfort zone, and nonetheless, I push forward because this is the way I'm going to grow and this is the way I'm going to deal with the situation. This is the mark of greatness. And that is something that all of us have to realize. And that is why it's incumbent upon us to do tshuva right away and not to wait to do tshuva before you die. Because before you die, right, echta v'ashuv, I'll sin and I'll do tshuva, it's not going to help. And if you say, well, I'm just going to do tshuva before I die, well, I have a little secret to tell you, my friends. Most people don't know when they're going to die. In fact, the Rechaim HaKadosh in Source 35 is quoted. He says, he knows people who said, I'm ready to do tshuva right before I die. Because if I do tshuva now, I have to live with that tshuva. And that's really hard. Because again, it's hard to move out of what you're comfortable with. It's hard to move out of what you are used to. But we know, my friends, if a person has that attitude, so we know that that day will probably, rarely, ever come. As the Tiva Torah points out, Bilam thought like this, you know, as long as I'm living, I can live any way I want. I'll do whatever I want. And I'll sin. You know what? An hour before, a day before, I'll do tshuva. Well, obviously, we don't know when that is. And then, Hashem loves Bali tshuva, and I'll die happily ever after. Says Rav Gamliel Rabinowitz, this is a lesson for all of us. Today, we have to do tshuva for the past, and to say, I'm going to be better, not to wait to Rosh Hashanah, not to wait to Yom Kippur, or another auspicious time. Because we know, those who push off tshuva have a klipa of Bilam, have an aspect of Bilam, of I'll get to it. And the experience has shown she'elu shedochim acharei sheyesh la mitoru tshuva midrashat hitchazkuk sheshomim. We know this to be true, that if a person has an awakening and says, oh, you know what, I'll get to it tomorrow, that tomorrow never happens. And that's how the Mefarshim explain, v'tzei hilachim ba'amalek, go out and fight Amalek machar, tomorrow. Amalek is the Yitzhahara. What do we have to fight? We have to fight the Amalek, that Yitzhahara that has one word, machar, I'll get to it tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll do tshuva. Tomorrow I'll start saying brachos with kavana. Tomorrow I'll daven with kavana. And you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to set time to learn every single day. You're right. Tomorrow I'm going to do that. Say hilachim v'amalek machar. The machar never happens. And I want to share something with you. And now we're moving into our final idea for today, Mirtz Hashem. My friends, none of us know, right? Mayulad yo. That's what Mishnah Pirkei Avos says. Shuv yom achal lifnei mitatcha. Do tshuva one day before you die. And the Talmid said, well, how do you know when you're going to die? So that's why the rabbi answers. That's why do tshuva today. And this is very important. Who we are in our lifetime, what we've developed of ourselves, those hurdles we overcome, those midos that we've overcome, that really working on ourselves, that is how we are going up to the next world. Right? We can't think, well, you know, when I die, everything's going to be, you know, peachy perfect. And I'm going to see the truth and things are going to change. We're really, you know, like frozen into how we are here is the way we're going to be there. The work has to happen here. And that is a little bit scary, very intense. And since we don't know Mayulajom, well, tomorrow will bring, right? Denial of Death, that bestseller. We think, you know, we're here forever. So this is part of the Yitzhara. Today, every night, before you go to sleep, time to do tshuva. it because this is who we're going to be. Now, Rabosa, I want to share with you a Gemara that is brought down in Source 38b. It's a Gemara in Gittin. And it just shows you the impact of the enormity of what we just said. Onkelos, very famous personality, the nephew of the Caesar who decides that he wants to convert. And we have Targum Onkelos, right? Shtai Mikravecha Targum, you know, to learn every week. Very, 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 very big Talmud Chacham. Onkelos is debating, should I become Jewish or not? So what happens? Sheonkelos kodem shenitgayer, Onkelos before he becomes Jewish. Ha'ela b'kishuv et Bilam. He raises up in sorcery Bilam. V'sha'alo, and he asked him, Mi chashuv u'mushar ba'olam ha'u. In that world, who is the most, you know, praiseworthy and the greatest and happiest? V'analo shisrael eme chashuvim. Klai Yisrael are the most exalted, the most special. And he says, you should know I'm still suffering. This is many years later, from what I did to Bnei Israel. And then listen to this. Then Onkelos says to him, Ha'im kedai lo liskayer. So based on what you're telling me, you've gotten punished. And Klai Yisrael are the most, you know, exalted and praiseworthy, and the most special. Should I convert? Don't convert. What? How's that possible? And this is the answer. Because Bilam never changes from his Bilamness. The emes is, the Jewish people are the most important. The emes is, the truth is, he's getting punished. But he can't move away from the fact that he still hates the Jews because that's how he was frozen when he reached the Olam HaEmes. Says Rav Victor Miller Zatzel, Zom Shachain Zom Matzavam Shorashayim, the asterisk in 38b, Shigami Mehem Makirim Et HaEmes, even if they know the truth and are getting punished, Mushreshet V'chudra Bahem Shimavah Otam Gam L'Olam Haba, wherever they are here, is implanted, embedded in them, in there. Mizazeh Lerot, it's wonders, it's to see at Kama Tzava Dembo Lamasa, we were holding in this world. If you don't change down here, Nishar Lulam Habav, Lachar Kol, Akaratamet, Nishar Achei, Kashurbo, Gekelev, even after you see the truth, you can't extricate yourself from it. Wow. Okay, my friends, so let's just summarize what we've seen and move to our final idea. Bilam wants to die, most Yisharim. Who are the most Yisharim? The Avos HaKadoshim. Being able to see above and beyond, not to get personally enmeshed in the situation, but to see what is clear. Bilam's problem is he's totally personally enmeshed. He doesn't have that clarity. He's so enmeshed that he fools himself. He's so enmeshed that he can't see within himself, and that's our challenge. Our challenge is that we are so enmeshed within ourselves and what we want and what our desires are that we can't see the clarity and the truth. And we fit the guest for the bed or the Torah for our needs. How do we get out of this? First, step back and think and ask and actually be thinking, is this the correct thing to do? Let me ask a Shaila. Let me see what's right. Not what I want, but what's right. The second thing is recognize that life is about struggle. And that life is not about how I can take the easy way out in whatever I do in life. That's the Bilam philosophy. That's the Cadillac philosophy. Our philosophy is running up that hill. You're right, I'm not necessarily telling you to find every hurdle like that guy did. But when the hurdles are there in front of you, instead of pushing them away, overcome them. Because that's how you're going to reach greatness. That's how you're going to break your midos. And that's how you're going to become the type of person you're going to want to be in that future world. So what does it mean, that transition to that future world? He wants to die the death of a Jew. What is the death of a Jew all about? I'd like to look at three ideas very briefly. The first comes from Megid Yosef, who points out, and this is in source number 40, that he brings the halacha in Parshat Shofti. Anyone who built a house and hasn't consecrated it, anyone who's built a vineyard and hasn't dedicated it, right, redeemed it, anyone who's engaged a woman, hasn't married her, return back from these certain types of wars, you don't have to fight. Why? Because you may die in the war and not be able to do these things. Okay, so that's life. You know, can't win them all, right? Can't whine about it, right? That's where it's at. You have to be grateful for what you have. So understand, my friends, that's not pshat. The pshat, it says, Mega Joseph, he says the following. May of Esther. The Mega Joseph says, you know what pshat is? He says, pshat is that at the moment of his death, what is he thinking about? I could have had that wine. I should have, you know, if I only got married earlier. What is he thinking about? He's thinking about his lost opportunities, and he's not thinking about his final moments about meeting Hashem. The Jewish death is about recognizing that I'm about to meet my Creator, and I need to prepare myself. To be thinking about what I'm leaving behind is taking away from the preciousness of this moment. Listen to the story that the Mega Joseph tells. The story happened in 1995. He's in New York with his wife, who is very sick. And they're doing treatment. You're not going to believe the story unless you see it inside. And Source 41. And he's in the waiting room. And there's a man there. And they start talking, a non-Jewish man. And he's a patient. And the man tells Rav Sorotzkin, I want you to know that I'm going through an operation tomorrow, and I have a 50-50 chance of living. And listen to what this man says to Rav Sorotzkin, Gevaldik. He says, you know, Rabbi, I'm really not worried about dying. You know, I die. That's life. Or that's death. But you know what I'm worried about? It's the O.J. Simpson trial going on right now. And if I die, I won't know whether he's guilty or not. So I don't want to die because I want to find out what the end of the story is. So Rav Sorotzkin says, don't worry. If you go to the next world, you'll have clarity and you'll know the truth. This is what he's worried about. He's worried about who's going to win the O.J. Simpson case. Those are your final moments. That's what you're thinking about. And likewise, Rav Sorotzkin gives the example. There was once a plane that an engine went down and they had to do an emergency landing. And it was very dangerous. And the stewardess gave out, you know, alcohol and said, you know what, who knows if we're going to live on the house. Whoever would like to drink, drink away. And there were two Miss Yaakov girls who went over to the rabbi and said, this may be the end moments of our lives. How do we prepare ourselves for death? Do you drink into oblivion? Or do you prepare to meet your Creator? Rabosai, this is Tamot Nafshi. There's a death. There's a process of death of a Jew. Let's go a little bit deeper, my friend. Say for Arus, Rosena Epstein sets up. And he brings here in Source 45, Rabbeinu Yonah, who says, Harotze Shiyelo Yom Hamavet Lechaye Ad, one who wants to have immortalized their day of death, talk to yourself. Recognize, instead of trying to deny it, be able to come to terms with it. And recognize, he says, what Rabbeinu Yonah says, anyone who God has granted them wisdom, yeshiva libo, should recognize and think about. Hashem Yisparach Shalcho Bolam Hazel Lishmor Mishmarto V'Torato V'Chukatav Mitzvotav. Hashem brought us into this world to do His Torah. V'lo Yifkach Einav Zulato Laso Tzuchuto. And the only reason we're in this world is to do Hashem's mission. V'Lakeit Hayami Mimasas Shichuto Be'Emuna. And if you, one, has been doing their mission with honesty, with loyalty, with that yashrus, yashuv uva verina v'simchas olam al rosho. Instead of dreading death, you will greet it with joy, because you know it's the culmination of all of your hard work. It's that gold medal, so to speak, after all of those practices with the hurdle. You know, the Gesher Chaim in his third volume, which is the Shkafa of Death, speaks about that just like birth, physical birth of a baby, is 7 to 9 months in utero, and then the baby is born. We on this physical body and soul is born. We on earth live 70 to 90 years classically, and it's the birth of the neshama. It's not death is the end, it's the beginning of something much greater, something much bigger. Right? Can you compare a little baby scrunched up there in utero, right, not being able to really do much, and then coming out to this world, wow, this is amazing. And we going up to the Olam HaEmes and living in Gan Eden, wow, that's really going to be amazing. If a person remembers her shlichus in this world, lo rak she yom amite no tzar v'ro, not only will not be painful, elo zikaron yom amavet u'simcha b'v'ro, you'll recognize that this is like the cherry on top of the cake, that we're here only for a larger purpose, and I'm not going to get, you know, lost in, I'm afraid of, I'm embracing it, because I know I have done my work properly, and I've done my work well. Lumatso, on the other hand, one who doesn't think about preparing for death, and preparing for death really means, as we've spoken about, living life, a meaningful life. So then, just like Adon Rishon was told, the day you eat it, you'll die. Ah, but he lived another 930 years. But every day was this, a day of death. Because if you're not going to live with meaning and purpose, with that overall goal that I'm here for a reason, and I'm going to make every day meaningful, Baba Yamim, like Avraham Avinu, they're making coming every single one of my days. So then it's a problem. But if one lives every day the best that one can, and every person has the expectations based on who they are, I'm trying to do the best I can in my days. So then death, again, is not something that we're avoiding. It's something that we understand is just a bridge to a higher level. And that's what David HaMelech is saying in the squiggly in 45, Mi Aisha Chavit Chaim Ohev Yomim Liro Tov, Lo Shanim, Lo Chadoshim, Lo Shavuos, not years, not months, not weeks, Rak Ohev Yomim, he loves days. Kol Yom Etzlo Kaveda Shenachozeret, every day, it's like something lost that can't be returned. And only someone like this can be Chavit Chaim, can love life. Robertson Heller, in this book, let's face it, has a very long chapter on death, a very fascinating chapter. And she notes, I'm just going to highlight one or two ideas. Gehenna, not to be confused with the Christian notion of hell, it's not a place of literal blazing fires. Gehenna is simply a place without designer apparel, baseball games, gourmet food, and television. For some people, that's hell. At that point, the avenue of rediscovering the inherent joy of spiritual connection is closed. When you have made yourself in this world, who you have made yourself in this world is who you are. And who you are at some point must face life without the physical body. If you have cultivated your spiritual side, then when you find yourself in the next world, which is totally spiritual, you will experience it as heaven. The Hebrew word for the world of souls without bodies is Olam Haba, literally the coming world. But really it means Olam Haba exists right here and now. We can't observe it because our physical body obscures perception. Olam Haba is who we actually are. Imagine being taken to a symphony hall to hear a performance of all nine of Beethoven's symphonies. If you've cultivated a taste for classical music, the seven-hour concert will be heaven for you. If you have never developed a taste for classical music, listening to 7 hours of Beethoven will be hell to you. The degree to which a person identifies with a spiritual essence is the degree to which his death is an experience of liberation and joy. 48. This is precisely the preciousness of life in this world. Not the pleasure it offers, but the opportunities for growth and change, which are unique to the physical world. Only in this world can one choose to stretch out one's hands to give money to a beggar. In other words, in other worlds, which are purely spiritual, one sees them with perfect clarity, the value of giving charity, but there are no hands and no money with which to perform the act. Regret rages like a fire for all one could have done. That is how the soul feels after death, looking clearly at the tremendous potential which life in the physical world offered for spiritual growth. The experience of one's failure to utilize that potential is called Gehenna. My friends, what Bilam wants to do is he wants to die this type of death, this type of transition into the next world, but he hasn't lived the spiritual world down here. He wants to be able to live spiritually forever. Because after all, there is this spiritual part of Bilam. He is a nothing. However, he has so corrupted it and has so damaged it that he can't possibly live that reality unless you've really worked on yourself. And that's why Bilam remains Bilam, and he is a person who doesn't get a chelek, a portion in the world to come. our job is to work in this world to the best of our ability. And then death is not something to be avoided. Death is a continuation of our spiritual world there. And Gehenna is the pain of what I could have done, what I should have done. And I have to now deal with those ramifications and to live a purely spiritual life when all I've cared about is physicality. That is painful, and that is an aspect of Gehenna as well. I'd like to end with a piece, which I have in Hebrew, even though it's in English as well, from the book Hakol Adon Kol, otherwise known as All for the Boss, where Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman talks about the final moments of his mother's life. And he describes how, being the oldest, and mother calls them over, and many people are standing by the bedside, and she talks to him and she tells him how she has dedicated her entire life to raise her 7 children and to be able for her husband to learn Torah. And in real dire poverty, she was able to try to build a healthy and happy home. And she asked him to take care of the other siblings and grandchildren and that they should follow in that path. And then she speaks to each and every person sitting there. And then, when she finishes speaking and talking to everybody, she said, Vidui Ashamnu until the end. Then she said she prepared her own tachrichim. And then, then something happened, he said, I'll never forget. Not me, not ever in the room. Ima Karalapeta. After she said Vidui, she suddenly started calling out in a very loud, clear voice. Ima Yakarashali, my mother, who's so beloved to me. Dodaye Karim, my aunts and uncles. Rav Itzele, a certain rabbi. Rav Gimbel, who was a great rabbi, one of the Gedolei Gaonim in her generation. Ubali Hayakar Mikol Vahuv, and my dear husband, who I love so much, who's so precious to me. All these people had already died. Hine Kulam Ba'im Lekrati. Wow, I see all of them coming to greet me. She turned her face, her eyes were upward. She straightened her feet. Her face had such a shine, such a light, until everyone in the room stood there frozen in their tracks. Then she called out, Shema Yisrael, Hashemu Elokim, Sfateha Na'u. Her lips moved, then they were silent. With a beautiful, pleasant smile on her lips, then her soul departed from her body. Somebody who lives their entire lives dedicated to their shlichus, to their mission in this world, the moment of death is a moment of connection. It's a moment of going back to the people that she loves so much. It's a moment of beauty. Bilam wanted this moment. He wanted, as Rav Moshe Feinstein says, many others, he wanted to die like a Yid, but not like live like a Yid. And you can't have your cake and eat it too. And this is the challenge that we have, my friends. We have to recognize that the challenges and hurdles we have are helping us to become who we are. But we have to be honest with ourselves. And we have to be able to take those challenges and be able to look at ourselves and ask ourselves, am I living a Bilam lifestyle? Am I living a contradictory lifestyle, a split personality life, not in a psychological way, but in a spiritual way? Am I fitting the Torah to the bed? Am I fitting what I need into my scheme of things? Am I paying attention? Am I really understanding who I am, what Torah is about? What is the right and wrong to have that higher level? And when a person lives their lives with that clarity, when a person lives their lives knowing that I'm here for a mission, and it's not living necessarily a Cadillac lifestyle, that's not why I'm here. I have plenty of time to rest after 120 years. When we live that way, so when we live in a way of meaning and purpose, so that our death becomes an experience of meaning and purpose, and then we're able to live that existence forever on that level of truth that we've experienced and spirituality that we've experienced here. It will stay with us, l'netzach netzachim, My bracha to all of us is that we should never fall into the Bilam trap, and indeed all of us should be able to be tamot nafshi, most yisharim.